The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We are very, very pleased that you are here with me today. Oh, we have a wonderful show in store for you, whether you're listening through the live stream or on our Facebook stream. Thank you, Kai Cole. Some early love from a listener. She had a wonderful show just before ours. You should always try and pop in at 11 a.m. on Thursdays just before my show to catch Kai's show, Our Daily Magic. That's a wonderful show. So, ready to get started? Of course, we start with our quotes of the day from the universe and from Abraham. I know you've been anxiously awaiting them all week long. Let's see what the universe and Abraham have in store for us today. First, from the universe. Ever wonder what would make life's fleeting pain and sorrow totally and unquestionably worth it? How about living forever, wildly in love, and loved wildly? Yeah, baby, the universe. We love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the universe. And again, you know, I did not cherry pick these. These are the quotes that came to my inbox this morning. They're always so apropos for who our guests are and what our topic is for the day. So yes, the universe talking about, you know, what makes pain and sorrow worth it. It's the knowing that this too shall change, that we are eternal, unending souls, that regardless of what we feel in this moment, that we will persist and survive and continue on past that pain. And that once we get past that pain, that actually, you know, that pain, while it's very difficult to deal with and it seems like in the moment like it's unbearable, once we've allowed it and given space to it and opened up to it and moved forward from it, it actually can be very informative. It actually has a lot of information in that pain that teaches us quite a lot about ourselves. So I know we have a tendency to feel like pain is something we don't want to feel, that we shut down to it. Pain is something that we always try to avoid. But actually, if instead of trying to avoid pain, if instead of trying to stuff it down and not feel it, if instead we just open up and be present to it, the more we're present to it fully, the faster and faster it dissipates. I once had a teacher who said that there is no pain so strong, and she was talking about the most painful emotions you can possibly imagine, like, you know, losing a child or a lover, that if you were not present to it for 1 week fully. And this, I mean, when she was talking present to it, she was talking about unplug the phone, pull down the curtains on the windows, and just really be present to it, that within 7 days, the feeling would lift. Now, it's not easy to stay with it for 7 days, but it is very rewarding if we can. And again, we learn a lot about ourselves, about how strong we truly are, about who and what we truly are. And once we've gotten through it once, then we learn, you know what? I can deal with this. I can do this. I'm stronger than I give myself credit for. And I can do it again if I need to. Not that I want to, but if I need to. So, wonderful quote from the universe for today. Let's see what Abraham has in store for us. Because others cannot vibrate in your experience, they cannot affect the outcome of your experience. They can hold their opinions, but unless their opinion affects your opinion, their opinion matters not at all. A million people could be pushing against you, and it would not negatively affect you unless you push back. That million people pushing against you are affecting their millions of vibrations. They are affecting what happens in their experience. They are affecting their point of attraction, but it does not affect you unless you push against them. Abraham. So we've had this quote, probably not recently, but I know I've had this quote or a similar quote in the past. And really what Abraham is trying to say here, and I really like this quote because it reminds us of our sovereignty. And we have a tendency to think, well, oh, this person did this, and you know that totally shook me up, and oh, they shouldn't have done that, and it knocked me down, and my frequency is low now, my vibration's not good. And the truth is, that's all nonsense. It may not seem like it in the moment, but the only reason why anybody else, what anybody else thinks, says, or does affects us is because we allow them to. It's because of the meaning we make behind them saying or doing what they did. The truth is, we have 100% control over how we choose to respond to it. And we do not have to respond to what other people think, say, or do. We really don't. We can choose to walk away. We can choose to totally ignore them. We can choose to focus on how it can be a gift for us instead of a trial or tribulation. And that we actually have complete sovereignty over our frequency, our vibration, how we're feeling in the moment. You know, I always like to say, what somebody else thinks, says, or does is none of my business. What's going on inside of me is my business. How I'm choosing to interpret and make meaning from what's going on, that is my business. And what somebody else is doing, that's their stuff. That's not my stuff. Now, seeing how other people react, often they're reflecting back to us things that are going on inside of us. And sometimes it's things we don't want to see, and that's why it triggers us. But if instead of being angry or mad or sad, if instead we're just curious, and we ask, I wonder why this is showing up. I wonder why this person is being like this in front of me. Especially when it is completely disproportionate to what's going on in the moment. You know, lots of times I have clients who come to me and they're like, Sam, I had this person the other day and all I did was this. And they started screaming and yelling at me. And usually I say back to them, I go, well, is that appropriate for what happened? And they're like, no, it wasn't. And I said, then it has absolutely nothing to do with you. You know, who knows? Maybe somebody stepped on their foot on the subway that day. Maybe their dog, bit them. Maybe their wife stole their lunch or their husband, left the bed messy. And so they were in a grumpy mood. When somebody does something that is so disproportionate to what is going on in the moment, it has nothing to do with you. We do not have to let it affect us. You know, when it's completely disproportionate, it actually makes it much easier to sort of say, okay, this doesn't have anything to do with me because this is completely ridiculous. When things are a little bit more appropriate, that's a little bit tougher. That, can be a little bit more difficult to navigate. But still, whatever somebody says, whatever somebody does, it's about them. It's not about you. And the only reason their experience is affecting us is because we're pushing back against it. I don't want to see this. I don't want to experience this. They're wrong. If we just stop making other people wrong and just say, you know what? It's their stuff. They're going through whatever they're going through. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just what they're experiencing in the moment. Then we don't have to let it push us out of our own center. We don't have to allow it to affect our mood, our day. Now, look, is this easy? Not necessarily. It's a practice. It's like going to the gym. It's the kind of thing, you know, you don't start lifting the 250-pound weights right away. You start with the 5-pound weight and then the 10-pound weight and then the 20-pound weight, and you build up to it. So start with small things. Start, like, next time somebody is snippety with you, just say to yourself, that's their stuff, that's not my stuff. You know, next time somebody cuts you off in traffic, that's their problem. That's not your problem. You don't have to yell at them. You don't have to get angry at them. You may choose to get angry at them, but realize that that's a choice. And you're choosing that choice. You can always make a different choice. It does not matter. If a million people say you're wrong, you're bad, you're ugly, you're fat, you're stupid, you can say, oh, well, that's their opinion. That's not my opinion. And you do not have to give in to it. So, two interesting and wonderful quotes of the day from Mike Dooley in the Universe and from Abraham. I hope you enjoyed them. And, of course, next week we'll have two more quotes for you. And now it is my extreme pleasure to welcome my guest. And let me flip the camera around on our Facebook live stream. Oops. Come on, flip. And let me get her in the frame here so you all can see how beautiful and lovely my guest is. And this is Adele Polaroise, author of the book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. So what could make a person feel that they can no longer go on living? Why would somebody think that ending their life is the only option? In The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes, Adele presents a semi-fictional book inside the mind and heart of a tortured soul on the verge of ending her own life. Written as a suicide journal, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes is a spiritual memoir that takes the reader on a journey of life, death, and rebirth. Drawing upon her own personal history of spirituality, she is able to give a much deeper insight on a topic most people struggle to talk about. And you know us here at the Conscious Consultant Hour, we love talking about taboo subjects. Adele attended the School of Visual Arts right here in New York City and has a degree in Fine Arts and English from the City University of New York, my alma mater as well. More than 10 years ago, she began studying under a master teacher of Western spirituality and has been a student of Kabbalistic practice ever since. So you know she's our kind of people, right, guys? Oh, and thank you, Joshua Shapiro, for tuning in on the Facebook live stream. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Adele.
Thank you so much, Sam. That was quite an intro.
Well, you know.
Quotes and all.
Quotes and all, yes. It's, you know, you got to set the tone right at the beginning.
Yes, and you certainly did.
Thank you. So I'm just curious, how does somebody who graduates with a degree in fine arts and English end up writing a book about suicide?
Interestingly enough, I think the story needed to be told. You know, it's a subject that is taboo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subject that is very much not in the limelight. It's kind of brushed under the bed, the sofa, behind the bureau,
right.
Any place but where it's supposed to be in conversation.
Right.
And I think it's a story about life. You know, the book in of itself is a story about life, death, and rebirth.
Mm.
The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes is actually the first part of a planned trilogy.
Ah.
And this particular book is book one.
Okay.
And it takes you through...
Does this mean I have to have you back two more times on the show?
Two more times at least, yeah.
All right.
Although this conversation could probably go on forever.
Yes, I'm sure.
So the book is based... on fiction. Mm-hmm. It's life experience. You know, most people ask me, they say, how much of it is fact, how much of it is fiction, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that basically it's a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a history of, as I would probably say most people have, or I shouldn't be that proactive, maybe no. some people have, of studying themselves, studying life, and actually find out what the purpose of living is, what they're actually doing here.
Mm.
And I think I kind of questioned that in myself and went through a period, I would say, of a bit of darkness and decided that there was a way to come out of it.
Okay.
And that darkness brought me into a period of light.
All right, wonderful. So I want to stop you there. And I have tons of questions for you, but we're going to take a quick break first. When we come back, I want to find out just a little bit about sort of your spiritual background, who it was that you studied under and how you got into the Kabbalah, and how that kind of fed into your writing of the book, okay?
Wonderful conversation.
Awesome. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is author Adele Paula Royce, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo woo!
High five!
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're talking with author Adele Paula Royce. Quick shout out to my Facebook live stream peeps. Thank you, Helen and Nancy, for tuning in as well. Always good to see you. And for those watching on the Facebook live stream, know that you can always put comments in. We'll see those comments. And, you know, you can ask questions that way. Or if you want to ask questions, you can call in at 877-480-4120. So, Adele, in your bio, it says you studied under a master teacher of Western spirituality. So, who exactly was that, and how did you happen to come across them?
Interestingly enough, it's Dr. Gerald Epstein.
Ah.
And Dr. Epstein is a practitioner here in New York City, mm-hmm. and he is my spiritual teacher. He actually wrote the foreword to the book.
Ah.
And he wrote it in the book, and he did the actual recording of the foreword in the audiobook version as well.
Oh, there's an audio version?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
good to know.
Very, very cool. I did the reading myself
because
I knew exactly how I wanted those notes to be spoken, so I did the spoken word.
Oh, now I'm really interested in hearing that.
And for all of the music aficionados out there, there's a rendition of a recording of Suicide is Painless.
Ah,
yes.
By Loudon Wainwright III. And actually, a little trivia fact, Loudon's sister or daughter... Sloan Wainwright used to do a show on our network here.
Interestingly enough, yeah. So it was Mandel, Johnny Mandel, and Mike Altman. And Tony Noe is the actual artist who did the recording in the audiobook. And it's a wonderful rendition of it. So it's another medium to hear the project.
So how did you meet Dr. Epstein?
Dr. Epstein Oh, more than a decade ago, I had met a gentleman at a place of work. I was in corporate America.
This guy
always looks so calm, cool, and collected. Mm-hmm. It was like, I used to say, what shrink are you going to? I think I've been through everyone in the tri-state area twice, going on round three. You know, like, who is it? You know, and he was very kind of evasive, not promoting anything. He said, oh, I take some classes with a doctor up on the Upper East Side. And I said, could I have his number, you know? And he gave me the number. And that number sat in my purse for over a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And finally, one day, nothing happens.
It's amazing you didn't lose it over all that time, right?
I'm very good with stuff like that. One fine day, I made the call. And I never looked back. I went in to see him. I actually, interestingly enough, I had a fear of flying alone. It was something that was really inhibiting me from freedom. And since I'm a double Sagittarian, my nature is to be free. And not being able to fly alone or having a fear of doing something like that was something quite awkward for me and very repressive. So I went there, and within a session, not 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, within a session or two, I was packing my bags and off to Paris. Yeah, and never looked back from that. So I found his work a synthesis of very interesting and intellectual and emotional, a potpourri of work that just resonated with me. And I stuck with it. I really dug deep. And his work, Dr. Epstein is actually a psychoanalyst and a medical doctor by trade. And in 1974, came back from Israel when he met his teacher, deceased Colette Avokir-Muscat, and she's also mentioned in the book. And after a nine-year apprenticeship with her, he came back to the States, and he completely made a 180 and started treating the human condition in a new way. With mental imagery. So, interestingly enough, I still study with him. And basically, I would say this book, in all due respect, is an homage to the work. So, that's the story with that.
So, let me ask you, was it just sort of a buildup of things that you were feeling that got you to say, I need to write a book about this? Or was there a specific incident that kind of like was the spark or the trigger that said, I've got to put this on paper. I've got to really get this out somehow?
I think that's a really cool question. And the reason it's a really cool question is because you're going to get a really cool answer.
Oh, okay, good. We like those.
I don't think it's me per se. I think it is life, okay?
Yes.
Suffering, in my observation, is inherent to this human condition. You're born into it. There's no way out.
That's what the Buddha says. Life is suffering, right?
Yeah, well, you know, suffering in a way, I think they say, Dukkha, I don't come from the Eastern, you know, spirituality. I come from Western, although East, West, North, South.
It all comes together.
It's all roads lead to Rome. You can take this from any discipline, and basically the past is dead, buried, gone. The future are stories of things that do not exist, and I'm no medical doctor, just a regular gal who wrote a book, but I would say taken to the nth degree, you could look at it and say, making up these stories, you can get into a schizophrenic or possibly psychoses. So the idea is to stay in the center of balance and in the moment. And I say, from my observation and my life experience, that it's the most difficult thing, or one of the most difficult things to do, as evidenced by the epidemic proportion of suicide. It's just rampant. I mean, and if you would understand the statistics, I've done a lot of homework on this, of the demographics of suicide. You're talking about children 10 to 13, 13 to 15. I mean, you say to yourself, what on earth?
Yeah, I think I remember hearing something that like the rate of suicide, teenage suicide has like increased dramatically over the last 10, 15 years.
It's in the book. Actually, the audio book I I believe, had it every 14 minutes. Someone is, you know, committing suicide.
So, right.
And the written word, the text was written a little bit later, and it was every 12. And when you look at your clock, I mean, it's a fascinating situation. Just watch a clock and say 14, 12 minutes. Let's break it down and say 13 minutes. Someone is killing themselves. And this is something that is just jaw-dropping.
Right.
I mean, it's almost, it's not almost, to me, it's an inconceivable process. It really is. You know, in the book, I actually wrote a quote, you know, that I had permission to put in there from Albert Camus. And I don't know if your audience is familiar.
Hopefully they are.
Albert Camus is, just I'll brush over it, was a French philosopher and a writer. And in The Myth of Sisyphus, he based this quote on a Greek mythological figure pushing a boulder up and up over the hill, correct?
Right.
And only to no avail. The boulder would get to the top and come crashing back down on him.
Right.
And, you know, the question then becomes, is life more than pushing a boulder up a hill? What is this life? What are we doing here? What is the purpose? Most people would say the purpose is to be non-disturbed. Well, guess what? It's not. You are brought into this life to be disturbed.
Absolutely.
And it's your job, or it's all of our jobs. You know, it becomes a job, unfortunately. It's not just a given. To find a way out and find a way out that is productive and not destructive.
Right.
And there is such a way. And your quotes at the beginning of our conversation to me are so profound because you spoke of choice.
Yes.
And my teacher, Dr. Epstein, would always, you know, state from Deuteronomy, I think it was 30:19, every moment God, source, whatever the universal force, whatever word you'd like to use, sets before you life, death, good, evil. Choose life so that you and your descendants may live. And that's a choice that all of us do have. But somewhere along the line, that becomes a bit cloudy to most. And again, I say it by the epidemic proportion of what the societal structure is dealing with at this point in time.
Right. But what, like, what was like the trigger that said I gotta write something about this?
I would say that I had about a decade worth of misery.
Oh, okay. That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll do it. Sure, it will. I mean, a minute worth of misery will sometimes do it.
Right,
but this was an elongated period.
So it was more like a buildup.
Yeah, of you know, familial, you know, issues.
Right.
A father, you know, deceased and going through an ill, you know, quite an illness.
Prolonged illness. Okay.
And then, you know, the prolonged illness. I had a sister. I'm the youngest of three daughters. And the middle one, may she rest in peace, is deceased. So that came after. And then my mom. So it was a 10-year period of a lot of stuff going on that I think really might have agitated and brought to the surface, you know, something that just came out in the medium of pen to paper.
Gotcha.
So again,
had you ever written anything before?
I'm an artist by trade.
Right.
I've gotten myself into corporate America, but always handled it very artistically. You know, I used to teach everyone why, you know, Thoreau went into the woods of Walden for 2 years and quoted biblical scripture, and somehow the business did follow. But, you know, it was kind of something that I've always done, whether it was painting. I was in the entertainment industry for a while and managed the career of an artist. So the writing was very natural to me. It was almost like Bob Dylan, I think, and I paraphrase here. He wrote the words because they needed to be said. And I felt that this needed to be out there.
Okay, so just real quickly before we go to our next break, the tone of your book is not the kind of tone you would expect from a book about suicide. Why did you choose to take, shall I say, a more lighthearted approach to it?
I think that everything has an opposite, Sam. I think that life is opposite.
Okay.
You have cold, you wouldn't know hot.
Right.
If you had light, you wouldn't know dark.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just reverse that, you know, coming from a period of darkness, you know, just by mere virtue of the fact that there is an opposite to everything,
right,
that there is light.
Right.
And sometimes you just need to go through that period of darkness to find that spark of light that might change everything with the twinkling of an
right,
eye.
Right.
And that's why it's not to give up.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, great. So let us take our break. And when we come back, let's just talk about, you know, your intention behind the book and what you're hoping the reader will take away from
this
book.
Another great conversation.
So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And if you want to join the conversation, the call-in number is 877-480-4120. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have an interest in marijuana, you want to know about marijuana, law, policy, and culture, then feel free to join me, Joseph A. Bondi, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning on my show, In the Know 420 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking with Adele Paula Royce about her book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. How did you choose the title?
It just came to me.
Oh, okay.
Instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually in class with my teacher. He gives classes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the works about 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And maybe lifetimes before that.
Yes,
but
yeah.
One day I walked into class and I said, you know something? And it was during that period probably. And I said, I'm writing a book and it's going to be called The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. They have a little black book for everything. Why not this? It just
like
came
that.
To me
like
and it
that.
Stuck.
That's good. That's being open to the life, what life brings to you. Huh?
Yes.
So since this is semi-fictional, have you actually contemplated suicide in your life?
No, I would say that it wasn't a contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a thought that comes and goes, and possibly with many people. I think when you get to a part of your life or to a point in your life when there is that period of darkness, you begin to question things. You begin to question Camus' question, is life worth living?
Right.
What am I doing here?
Right.
You know, and I think that a lot of it does come down to what my teacher would always make reference to, the false state of emergency. And I think this is a really important topic to bring out to the world and the audience. You know, he would always say that, and I'll explain what that is, that a false state of emergency is reacting to something that you might be feeling, but it's not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, a true state of emergency might be if someone were holding a gun to your head, right, immediately ready to pull that trigger.
Right. Yeah. I had once on my show a couple of women who were therapists who also did brain research, and they said that, you know, we get under stress so much physically because we constantly react like everything is a life or death situation.
Right.
Because that's how we are trained sort of evolutionarily coming out of the jungles and the plains, that, you know, you heard a twig snap in the forest that could be a tiger about ready to eat you. So everything was a life or death situation. So when we're like going on the subway and someone pushes us into the subway car, it's a life or death situation unconsciously in our brain. But they're not really. And once we start to get that, like, is this a life or death situation? I'm taking this as what you're saying.
Right.
It's not.
That's right. It might feel very real to the person experiencing it.
Right.
You know, but it's not by any means true.
Right.
So we get ourselves into these false states of emergency. And to your point, when you were doing your quotes, it's your reaction to something.
Yes. Yes,
I mean, you
exactly.
take Dr. Viktor Frankl.
Yes.
Okay. Was in the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would say, and again, paraphrase, the only thing that his captors could not take from him was his internal freedom.
Right.
That's not something you can surgically remove from somebody.
Right.
So
right.
it's your internal state. And that's why, once again, what you said was very poignantly stated. It's an inside job.
Right.
You need to look inward. The
right.
outside world is not going to give you
right.
what you need.
Right.
It might give you some physical pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It might give you some economic pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It might give you a potpourri of lots mm-hmm. of different stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's the peace of mind that is not going to come from the outside.
Right, right.
Interesting.
And to that, I was at a conversation with a friend who's also a spiritual teacher, and he was talking about, he read about one of these early neuroscientists who would do experiments where they would stimulate different regions of the brain, and he could like cause somebody to laugh uncontrollably, to cry, to taste something salty in their mouth, taste something sweet. But he said the one thing he could not do is make somebody want to cry or want to laugh. And so his conclusion through all his research is that the mind is not actually located in the brain. You know, so it's the same kind of thing.
That's right. That's right.
So when you started to write this book, now you said it was like a 5-year journey, a 6-year journey, something like that?
Yeah. And again, I say lifetimes before that. Everything started really funneling through and being channeled, and it just started coming out.
Right, right. So when you started it, did you sort of have one idea about the book that mm-hmm. sort of changed and morphed over the time until you finished it? Or did you kind of start and end kind of basically where you wanted it?
That's a really great question. That really is. And what I could say about that is, interestingly enough, you start writing, you start a process, and it starts to morph, to your point, mm-hmm. into many different areas.
Mm-hmm.
The way it morphed for me mm-hmm. was the vulnerability mm-hmm. of, as I was writing this, how much of that truth was being chipped away inside of myself
mm.
and how much of that protagonist was actually being created.
Uh-huh.
What was that fine line? What was that demarcation point? And as I started writing, a little bit of that truth, little by little, step by step, started to come out.
Kind of like Michelangelo carving David,
the angel, right?
You know, out of
right.
the stone. It was always there. He just had to reveal
that's
it.
That's right.
Interestingly
enough, I used one of those quotes on my Facebook posts, and I thought it was so beautiful. And I think it was, I carved and carved until I saw the angel.
Yeah.
It was always there. That's
it was
right.
always there. Right, right. So what's your intention behind this book? What are you hoping people will get from it after they read it?
Hope. It's a book of hope.
Okay.
It's a book of, obviously, the intention is for people to homeopathically was the intention. I felt that homeopathically like cures like. If you're allergic to a substance, one time I went to a homeopathic doctor and he found out I was allergic to, say, an egg. What they would do, they would find a tincture and you would take it sublingually for X amount of time. And after a while, you would no longer be allergic to the substance. In essence, that's what this book is. It's like cures like. It's, in a way, misery likes company. I don't mean it in the sense that misery really likes company, but in the same way that but in the same way that beautiful poetry can express that. You know, why do people, I mean, people write from pain. Beautiful art's created from pain. Look at, you know, Pollock or Van Gogh or any great music. If you really read the lyrics and get into the vibration of what's being said, I mean, Mozart, you know, Beethoven, there is an element, a degree of pain, even in the vibration.
Maybe
not the written text or the paint, but there is a degree of pain that comes with beauty.
Have you ever lost anybody to suicide? Do you know anybody, a friend, a relative?
I personally do not, but I've been having conversations, Sam, doing these radio broadcasts, and my world is just opening up to an entirely new arena of people who have been telling me. I was interviewed by a woman whose mother committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
And then I started doing more and more research, and I was watching, it might have even been a TED Talk at one point, a woman, you know, people were saying, well, what about all of the people on a negative aspect? You know, it's very selfish to do this when you leave people behind. You know, that's a selfish thing to do, to kill yourself. And I started researching that, and I found a woman who gave a talk, and her son was actually one of the shooters and one of the people that then killed themselves in Columbine. And the story was, the, you know, the expose that she was talking about was her experience as the mother of this son and what she experienced from society and how they viewed her after that. So it's not necessarily that it's a selfish act on the part of the person that's doing this.
I
mean, but it's the people that are left behind, not necessarily have the same experience. By mere virtue of what that woman experienced.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's
It certainly is a fascinating story.
You know, I had a very good friend of mine. He was probably my best friend back in junior high school. In high school, ended up committing suicide about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And it turns out, like I found out from his brother after he'd done it, that he'd been suffering from depression like most of his life. And it was such a shock to me because, you know, he was married, he had a good marriage, he had two great sons, he had a successful business, you know, he had all the outward trappings of success, but obviously he must have been in so much pain to end his own life. Do you have any advice for people who, let's say somebody confides in them that they're thinking about committing suicide? Like, what would you say to that friend who just found out, like, somebody's thinking of committing suicide? What would you say to them?
That's an interesting question, and the reason I'm saying that is because, again, I'm a regular gal and not a medical doctor, but there are hotlines, there are helplines, there are therapists, there are spiritual practices, there are so many places to reach out in an effort to try to grasp onto something for the hope. And suicide comes from a sense of hopelessness, that you don't think that there's anything beyond
that
state.
No way out.
Exactly. And to me, if you can just manage to hang on for that one instant, sometimes, like I said before, life could change with the twinkling of an eye. But there are different paths and different avenues to find some help out there. And I certainly encourage it.
Yes, absolutely. Just really quickly before we go to break, do you have any personal practices that you do that help you with dealing with pain and suffering that you find effective?
Yes, I follow Dr. Epstein's methodology. Uh-huh. And again, he synthesizes different work into his imagery, but it's mental imagery that mental I find imagery. The most okay. effective.
All right. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, believe it or not, it's time for us to take our last commercial break of the show.
No.
Amazing. Yes. It's, things go by so fast when we have such interesting guests.
Thank you.
So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about, the what's coming, the next two volumes. And
great.
We'll also leave people with where they can find the book and how they can get in touch with you and follow you on social
Fantastic.
Media. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with author Adele Paula Royce, author of the book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
Hello, this is Mark Torres.
And Pronto Comics' own Dominic Sperano.
And listen to our show, It Came From the Radio, right here on talkradio.nyc, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we talk about entertainment, movies,
comic books, and other news.
So make sure you check us out. That's right here, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Wednesday, talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with author Adele Paula Royce, author of the book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes. Since you're kind of have this spiritual background or spiritual side to you and Kabbalist practice, do you believe in reincarnation?
Interestingly enough, resurrection.
Resurrection.
Yes.
In what way?
Well, in the way that I don't believe that we're coming back in another life form. Mm-hmm. I believe that we are being resurrected in spirit.
You know, I once asked a friend if they believed in reincarnation. They said, well, I believe in recycling. I thought that was a great way
answer,
to look at
yeah.
it. Yeah. Real quick before, I want to ask you about the other two books that you have in the works, but you have a lot of music references, a lot of sort of pop culture references
yeah.
in your book. Why did you integrate those in? Because it makes it kind of, it adds a certain flavor to it.
Well, the flavor is vibrational, the bottom line. You know, it's an international language.
Right.
People don't necessarily have to be on a certain page mentally or emotionally or spiritually. It's just a vibration.
Right.
And it speaks to everyone. And I happen to love music, you know, and I just wanted to carry it through into the book. And that's why I did the audiobook, actually, because it's really cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I want to really hear that. Okay. So what's the second and third book going to be called? Do you know yet?
Yes, I do. Yeah, they're in the works. Second book, The Little Black Book of Suicide Notes from the Beyond, where we're all going to be taking a journey together in novel form through the underworld. And I'm going to be interviewing, well, the protagonists will, we'll be interviewing all of the famous and not so famous people like Hemingway, Van Gogh, the 27 Club, who died intentional deaths by their own hand.
Okay.
And hear what these people had to say.
Going to interview Dr. Kevorkian, too?
I actually mentioned him in the book.
Oh, you did? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Note number 27.
So that's, do you know what title is for book number three yet?
Number three, yes. Coming back to life in a new way, coming back to this mortal coil.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and it's coming back from the underworld to what life is really all about, love. Coming back and finding out what we're really doing here.
Ah, interesting. You know, one of my quotes from Mike Dooley in the Universe, Mike Dooley wrote a book, I forget the name of it, but What Dead People Want You to Know or something like that.
Oh,
it's a great title.
Find out.
So you probably would really appreciate his book. How much longer do you think it's going to take you to get these next two books out?
Well, this book was just published a few months ago, so it actually has a life of its own. It's like having a baby.
Yes.
You just kind of take your hands off it,
protect
it, but let it do its thing.
Right.
So the other one is in the works, book two, and book three is in concept.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it'll be a couple of years before they...
Well, a little shorter than that, hopefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
I'd like to get them out there as soon as possible.
Okay, so we'll basically you'll be coming back here on the show like once a year or something.
I certainly hope before then.
Before then. What did you learn about yourself in writing the book?
I learned a lot. A lot of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Probably the most important thing that I learned was that life is beautiful. And once you learn how this game of life is played, you can play it like a Stradivarius and play it well and really enjoy your moments here and realize how precious they are.
So someone picks up your book. They haven't heard an interview. They don't know what the book's about. They pick it up and they start reading. What do you really hope that they're going to come away with by the time they finish reading the book?
Sam, I really want them to come away with hope, ! It's a journey of hope. It's a journey of life to death to rebirth. And coming out with a sense of hope that it is a beautiful life, to quote the movie. And it's a way to, you know, not to feel alone.
No.
You know, that feeling of loneliness that people feel that they're just out there on a ledge by themselves.
That's right.
They're not.
Right.
They are not alone.
Right. Do you feel that there are any situations where suicide is okay?
I feel that... That's a tough question.
I'll answer it for me so that it make it easier for you.
I would like that.
I personally do think that there are not common but very uncommon situations where there is a sort of no way out situation, that sometimes the best thing is to say, I'm just done with this life and I want to move on. And I'm thinking of... You know, and I would never say this for a young person, but for somebody who is older, who's lived a long life, and maybe they have some terrible disease and they're in pain all the time, and there's just, it's not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse, and they would rather leave while they still have their mental faculties around them. I could also see someone doing it just in an extreme example in time of war. You're captured. You know these guys are just going to torture you and try and get as much information out of you. You don't want to endanger your comrades who might be somewhere nearby, and you don't want a chance giving it up, and you would rather sacrifice yourself than give them up. Things like that, I feel, can be apropos, but it's something I feel is very individual to a particular situation.
I'm glad you answered that, because the jury's still out for me on that. I mean, I would say never to sacrifice yourself, as my teacher would say, on the altar of another person's needs.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the idea that, as I say, you never know from nanosecond to nanosecond what that next nanosecond might bring.
Bring, yes, that's very true.
So it's a tough question, and I'm glad I really didn't have to answer it other than the way I answered it.
Very good, very good. So, did you, I'm just curious, because since you're an artist, did you do the book cover?
No, actually. The initial drawing was in charcoal, done by a very talented artist by the name of Vincent Noe.
Uh-huh.
And the graphic designer then layered it and made it into the cover. And that was Maggie Stevens. And the photography was done by a very dear friend of mine, Caroline Erickson.
Okay, so it does take a village to birth a book.
Yes,
huh?
It certainly does.
Since the book has been out a few months already, what kinds of reactions have you gotten from it? I mean, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of accolades for it.
Yes.
But have you found anybody kind of misunderstanding the book?
So far, one person.
Well, only one person. Okay.
And I've met a lot and spoken to a lot.
Yeah,
there was actually one interview that was a bit on the edge. And I think the most important thing is you really need to get a project like this or else you're kind of on another wavelength. And I don't really know if it's my job to convince anyone.
Right.
I think it's, you know, left up to interpretation, and sometimes the energies just don't mesh.
Right.
So I would say so far one person.
Okay. All right. Well, you know,
it's
actually, they say if you haven't upset somebody, then you're not really doing good work.
Oh, okay. There you go. I'm exonerated.
Yes, you are. Absolutely. So, where can people find the book now that it's out?
It's actually on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, iTunes for the audiobook. And it's under AdelePaulaRoyce.com.
Okay.
And the Facebook page is Adele Paula Royce. So it's all under the name. It's very simple.
And that's spelled A-D-E-L-E. Paula, PAULARYCE.
Correct.
After these next two books, what's next for Adele Paula Royce?
I'd be futurizing.
Okay.
Making up stories of things that don't exist.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I really don't know right now.
So you mentioned like a TED Talks before. Do you think you'll do a TED Talk on this?
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, you know, they have TEDx. I did a TEDx talk last year, so I highly recommend, you know, you start with just doing a TEDx talk. They're easier to get into, though it does take a little bit to do it. But I think this is it's a very important topic, and you have a very unique take on it, so I think people, especially in terms of a presentation and an audio presentation, I think people would be more attuned to listening to it.
That sounds like great advice. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, thank you so much for taking time out. Are you a native New Yorker?
Yes, I am.
All right. I met the other one because whenever I go anywhere, I'm like the only native New Yorker around. So it's nice to know there's one other.
An old Brooklyn gal. Yeah.
All right. I'm
New
a
York.
Bronx boy myself, yeah. But that's okay.
And I wanted to thank you very, very much for the time to bring this out to the world.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much,
Adele. Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. And I just want a big shout out to all of my peeps on the Facebook live stream. Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us later in the show. Of course, we'll have another show. Now, next week, it is 4th of July, so there are no shows on Tuesday next week. But yes, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we will be having shows next week. My guest next week, you're going to have to sign up for the newsletter to find out, because I never remember these things because I have it in my calendar, so I don't have to remember. So make sure you go to talkradio.nyc, scroll down, sign up for the newsletter, let you know all about upcoming guests on my shows and what the other shows are about and local events, and so you can prepare yourself for when we have interesting guests like we had today with Adele. So thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful 4th of July holiday, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo! Woo!
What's that?
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on talkingalternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of the Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on the Rob and Callie Show Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt. A classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.